What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Welcome to The Exchange, everyone. I'm John Fort, in for Kelly Evans, and here is what's ahead. Walmart gets whacked off more than 10.5% so far, on pace for its worst day in 35 years, and the CEO making troubling comments about inflation. So is this a warning sign that consumers are paying so much more for food, they won't have so much money for other stuff? Plus, well, you got inflation and a volatile stock market. Perfect recipe for gold, right? Wrong. We'll ask the CEO of Barrick Gold about the recent price decline. But chip stocks higher today, AMD getting an upgrade and leading the group higher. We will talk to the analyst who made that call and sees a 40% upside even from here. But where else would we want to start than with Dominic Chu for a look at where stocks are trading right now?
So right now it's generally green, and it has been for pretty much all day, all session long. And we are, by the way, tilting towards the higher end of the range so far. With the S&P 500 specifically, I'll focus on that because we focused a lot on the other components so far. It's 4,068 for the S&P right now. We're up about 1.5%, 60 points. We were up about 25 points at the lows of the day, and then up about 67 points at the highs. So again, tilting towards that higher end of the intraday trading range so far. The NASDAQ composite up nearly 2%, the outperformer, 220-point gain, 11,882 in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 32,537, up about 1%. That's roughly 312 points. One place to keep a close eye on is travel and leisure overall, specifically because of United Airlines. United Airlines comes out with results earlier this morning that were better than expected. It also raised its current quarter revenue forecast. And the CEO, Scott Kirby, says he sees the busiest travel season for the summer since before the pandemic. And that's helping to lift all the other airline stocks. American's up 5.5%, Delta up 4.5%, and then Carnival Corporation and Booking Holdings up as well, although Booking Holdings is getting some help from analysts over at Wolfe Research that calls that stock one of its top picks for the second half of 2022. And then from a stock side of things, two of the five best performing stocks in the S&P 500 have nothing to do with each other, really. It's Citigroup up 8% and Paramount Global up 14%. What do they have in common? Yes, it is Warren Buffett. Berkshire Hathaway releases a regulatory filing saying that they've now taken stakes in Paramount Global and Citi. That Buffett-Berkshire boost helping those two stocks, again, two of the top five best performers in the S&P, not on anything else really except that Berkshire investment, John. I'll send things back over to you.
That'll do it. Dom, thanks. Well, it's also a tale of two retailers today as Home Depot holds slightly positive while Walmart sinks hard, more than 10% on pace for its worst day again since 1987. Both companies beat on the top lines, but Walmart missed on earnings. As you guessed it, higher food costs and fuel costs weighed on margins. On the call this morning, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon warned the inflation situation is, quote, unusual, and later added, we're seeing double-digit food inflation, and I'm concerned inflation may continue to increase. So if Walmart, the largest retailer in the U.S., can't manage rising prices, who can? Let's bring in Chris Horvers, JPM retail analyst. Chris, welcome. There's a couple things to look at here. One, what Walmart and Home Depot results tell us about the overall economy, and then what they tell us about the companies themselves. But let's start with the economy. Working class consumers getting pinched, right? But perhaps homeowners less pinched because at Home Depot they're willing to spend more to get less stuff?
There's a lot of cross currents going on right now with the consumer. You see a bifurcation of the low end versus the high end. Food costs are running up 10-11%. Energy costs are up 15%. That the two lower quintiles of consumers spend about 40% of their monthly income on those two buckets of costs. So that low end is getting squeezed. We're seeing more private label expansion growing faster than branded product. We're seeing miles driven down as that low-end consumer economizes on gas prices and the impact to their wallet. On the other end, you're also seeing some, which Walmart talked about, some shifts in share of wallet. So a lot of the categories that were big COVID winners, outdoor, home, consumer electronics, apparel. Those things are seeing weakness, and the late spring exacerbated that impact. On the other side, that Home Depot Pro remodel customer, that homeowner, they're doing much better.
So my question is, what do you expect to happen from here, even with that consumer that's holding up better? Because interest rates are going up, right? So perhaps that consumer less willing to borrow to get that extra appliance, to do that renovation that's taking so much longer and costing so much more anyway. So which way do things tilt? Does that better off consumer from Home Depot prop the economy up? Or does what that Walmart food buyer is experiencing ripple through the rest of the consumer economy?
Yeah, our broad view is that you're in accelerating sort of negative change at the margin across the consumer. We talked about that low end. A lot of these prices are persistent. The food manufacturers are raising prices more so today than they did 2 months ago. So that we're going to see more price investment from Walmart. We're going to see more trade out of general merchandise. The second thing is, as that United CEO talked about, people are traveling this summer. And so the focus on spending around the home is going to deteriorate. And then the last point is for a Home Depot and Lowe's, if you look at the correlation to mortgage rates are back to 2009 levels. Home affordability is back to 2008 levels. Those impact that pro remodel business on typically a 1 to 2 quarter lag. So what I would say is that, and Home Depot's business is increasingly driven off the price side. So we would expect that to deteriorate later in the year. It's no surprise as that pro customer is working on backlogs. We're trying to get our, you know, people are trying to get kitchens done and bathrooms done. Well, as that backlog drains, you'll see that lagged weakness show up more on that Home Depot and Lowe's pro remodel business.
Sure, and you got to wonder about that consumer, maybe, especially in places like Silicon Valley, whose pay is largely in stock, 100%. Who's seen that come down. Maybe they decide they don't need that remodel after all, and that backlog doesn't end up looking like we expected to. Okay, now on the companies themselves. We've talked a lot over the last couple years, really, about how they built up digital capability and what that might do for loyalty down the line. So even as Walmart takes this short-term hit on margins, not passing all of those prices through to consumers, are they going to be able to benefit by having a larger share of wallet with that customer because of the investments they've made in the digital business?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, traditional retail, which was presumed dead 5-6 years ago, and we've always argued that you can't count these businesses and these companies out. I think our business has taken a lot more share in digital, whether that's digital advertising. Walmart's digital advertising business was up 30%. We expect Target's digital advertising business to grow up 30%. And on that share of wallet, the one I'm most bullish about, frankly, is Target. In terms of they have the best traffic, they have fewer competitors post-COVID, they have a higher end customer relative to Walmart, and they've been taking share across the box with digital, particularly their drive-up curbside business, being a major enabler of that.
So if, therefore, some of these retailers are gonna have an ugly look, I mean, we see, again, Walmart down 10.5% so far today. Is the market, you think, pricing in that digital loyalty benefit that some of these retailers might show longer term? Is there opportunity buying at these levels, or do you need to stay away because you expect that extra leg down from the better off consumer who's going to be affected by these interest rate hikes?
Yeah, set me back on retail. It's just not a late cycle sector. One, we don't like interest rate increases because that burdens the consumer. It discounts the stock to a lower price. The second thing is, what's unique about late cycle is the top line slows and the cost structure inflation accelerates. And that's exactly what you're seeing with Walmart. So earnings revisions after 2 years where all these companies were COVID winners, earnings revisions are now going from sharply up to flat. And in this case, in Walmart's case, down. And that's just not good for stocks.
Finally, what do we learn about labor from these two reports, particularly Walmart? Walmart talked about people coming back from COVID more quickly than expected and actually being overstaffed, which is not a word we're used to hearing in this economy.
Yeah, you're hearing, it's interesting because you also heard from Amazon as well. You're hearing that change where heretofore we had a hard time filling positions. People were staying away because of COVID. People were staying away because of stimulus. Well, as you entered into 2022, the child tax credit went away, SNAP benefits receded. We lapped all the stimulus dollars, both from the January checks as well as the market March checks. So that consumer is being forced to start to go back to work. And you're seeing that in Walmart's numbers. You're still running very high single-digit sort of wage inflation in retail, and more so actually for the overall consumer. But we would expect that to cool down over the year. And again, I think it's a bit early to really try to get more bullish on retailers given all of these dynamics. Let's see when the Fed sort of yields, so to speak, and at the same time when we start to see estimate revisions downward on 2023. I think we need to get some of that in the stocks before we go out and start to buy opportunistically.
Well, it's sobering, but that makes sense. Chris Horvers, thank you.
Thanks, John.
JP Morgan. Now, despite the elevated level of inflation, volatility, and the Fed tightening, our next guest doesn't see a recession ahead and says now's the perfect time to be an active stock picker. Let's bring in Jeff Krumpelman, Chief Investment Strategist and Head of Equities with Mariner Wealth Advisors. Jeff, I just heard a really rough story from Chris suggesting that this could be a months-long issue, but you think that this is more of a correction than a slide into a recession. Why?
Well, going into the year, we really did try to forewarn folks that we thought this would be a year where we'd see perhaps a sizable correction in the order of 15-20%. And there could be a little more downside, from here. But we do think that it will be short because the foundation or the fundamental story is still quite healthy. You go through the employment, low unemployment claims, earnings that, are actually 80% of companies beating, 10% earnings growth, and certainly consumer spending patterns. People are flying, people are going out to restaurants, they're getting back out there and buying services. So it's not typical to see a recession, and the three or four signs that we look for quantitatively, inverted yield curve, LEIs that are rolling over, and just activity reports for manufacturing and service, they're simply not there. Well, I was going to say, we really did think that we were likely for a pullback. It's very rare for the market to have four consecutive years of double-digit returns.
Right.
And, when you couple that with the robust historical returns and all the transitions we have going on right now, that we think the market will and the policymakers will adequately deal with, not worst-case outcomes, but between inflation, Fed rate hikes, geopolitical, midterm election year, you expect a correction.
So you expected a stumble, but you're saying the market's not going to fall down the steps. The economy's not going to fall down the steps. Here's my pushback and question about that. A lot of skepticism right now about a soft landing. And when I look at these Walmart and Home Depot numbers, I see a consumer that is being affected on the food side and the gas side by inflation. And then even on the positive side at Home Depot, a consumer who's buying less and spending more, but maybe we haven't seen the full impact of higher interest rates. What are the benchmarks, the kind of signposts that you want to see over the next few months to increase your confidence that this soft landing is going to happen?
I think our number one fear is not recession, but it's how high will rates go? And I think that PEs have contracted this year because folks are baking in the fact that rates are probably going to overshoot to the upside and be higher than originally thought. So PEs have come in. Now, I think if inflation calms, which we do expect, and the economy slows, not to recessionary levels, but to just slow, steady, back to the days of 2-3%-ish, that you already see through mortgage rates going to 5.
Okay.
That the economy should do that. Inflation should calm.
I want to get to your picks, though. You like Booking Holdings, Aptiv, even ServiceNow and Adobe, which, some names, high flyers that have taken a beating. What are some others and why?
Well, I think you mentioned the three. Some of these stocks are down, 40%. So that's why it's a stock picker's market, if you will. It's a market of stocks, not a stock market. And when you get, just take ServiceNow that you just mentioned, you get 30% growth. And a stock that's down more than 40% than peak with the business model that they have, within workflow management and cloud, it's a great opportunity to own. Other names that you didn't mention that are on the list would be United Rental. And I would challenge anybody watching the telecast right now, take a look at the relative strength or the price trend of United Rental over 2, 5, and 10 years. It's an infrastructure play, and they do a marvelous job in the rental equipment market to construction companies, industrial companies. Great earnings growth, and it's trading at 8 times. So, you know, I think you see both growth and value opportunities in here, and you want to blend both of them.
Okay. Well, maybe the sky isn't falling. Jeff Krimpelman from Marino Wealth Advisors, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now coming up, buy good companies when they are down. Piper Sandler putting AMD in that category, upgrading the stock and seeing a more than 40% potential rally from here. The analyst behind that call joins us with one particular catalyst he points to next month and one area where he says AMD is way ahead of the competition. But first, gold is supposed to be an inflation hedge, but too much inflation can prove problematic, particularly for the miners. We will talk to the CEO of Barrick Gold about the crosswinds he's seeing with the stock down nearly 19% over the past month. And as we head to break, let's get a quick check on the market. You can see there the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ right about near the highs of the session. Dow up 1%, S&P nearly 2%, NASDAQ more than 2%. The exchange back after this.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome back to The Exchange. Well, it used to be that when inflation took hold in an economy, investors would flock to metals, especially gold, often considered one of the best hedges against inflation. That hasn't played out this year, with copper sliding about 5%, gold flat, and silver off by more than 7%. Why? Well, investors are concerned about possible recessions and continued shutdowns in China. Joining me now exclusively on The Exchange is Mark Bristow, president and CEO of Barrick Gold, one of the biggest gold and copper producers. Mark, welcome. I still don't quite get it. I mean, inflation hedge. I mean, that's how we think about gold. But energy prices are important too, right? Take some energy to mine gold.
Sure. And, you know, John, I think in your introduction, you cover a number of things. Very different copper and the abnormal factors of influencing the copper prices today with China. You're not really on the side with all the COVID issues. On gold and its performance in unprecedented times of risk, you know, it's not only inflation. We're back to the 1980s where you've got deglobalization rather than globalization. A lot of things, you know, I've just listened to part of your program where some people are saying, it's still going to go higher. The markets are great. Everything's going to be fine. But the one thing I'm sure of, it's not. And it takes time for gold to respond to these crises. You go back 2008, it took until 2011 when we reached the peak gold price.
Well,
so it takes time.
Well, are you affected by crypto at all? Because some people out there think cryptos are the new inflation hedge, that they're the new gold. I don't know that they're acting like inflation hedges, but maybe there's some demand there for them.
No, I think, Everyone says that, John, but crypto is not a currency, I'm afraid.
So simple as that. Let me go back to the business then of metals. Tell me about silver. Why is that one off and what's that responding to? Copper has multiple uses, including a lot of practical ones, even where gold doesn't. Why is silver behaving this way?
Well, I mean, silver is a sort of a gold follower. And, you know, it's been performing really well recently. There's been a lot of speculation about the industrial offtake of silver. And so it's a slightly different market to gold. A lot of people refer to it as a poor man's gold. I think those three commodities are quite different. Copper is definitely, in my mind, the most strategic metal in today as far as metals go. Gold is a precious metal, different again. And again, they're going to behave differently, but, Barrick mines gold and copper. One's precious, one's very strategic. I think that's the right balance for a modern mining company today.
So how does mining operation look for you as we look through the rest of 2022? Given all of the supply chain disruptions that we've seen and even the shortages of certain materials that are used in refining, from what I hear, are your supplies looking stable? Are they healthy? Or are you going to end up and your competitors, your cohort, with shortages that are going to affect both the price of the product that you're putting out and perhaps the price of your stocks?
I think the differentiator of who's going to succeed and who's not in this year is going to lie in how you manage your supply chain, procurement, and logistics. And you really put your finger on it. And so I think this world is going to see stockouts. And it's those people who can manage those companies that can really. And by the way, the same goes for retail that you've just been talking to. You know, it's how do we manage in this very dynamic world that we face today? It's very different. It's something we are not used to. And it's those agile organizations, whether they're mining companies or others, that are going to win in this environment.
Not every day we can draw a line between Walmart and gold miners, but we can do that in this economy. Mark Bristow with Barrick Gold, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, John.
Coming up next, the dollar index on pace for the third straight daily loss, but still up nearly 8% so far this year. We're going to look at the winners and losers from a stronger dollar. Plus, CNBC's Disruptor 50 list is out today. Coming in at number 14 is a company shaking up the transportation industry. The CEO joins us live with what they're doing to make trucking more efficient. And as we head to break, take a look at the Dow heat map. Walmart, McDonald's, and Coke, the biggest laggards. Boeing, Dow, and Cisco, your biggest gainers. The Exchange is back after this.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to the Exchange. Markets right now near session highs. The Dow's high was 450, up now 350. The S&P and the NASDAQ doing quite well. Also, S&P up 1.5%, NASDAQ up 2%. and a quarter. The Russell's doing even better. It's about at session highs at about 2.7. Let's check the sectors. Materials and financials, your biggest gainers. Consumer staples, the only sector in the red today. Here's some of the movers this hour. Energy stocks moving higher with Chevron, Marathon, Pioneer, and ConocoPhillips all hitting record highs today. Chinese internet stocks also having a good day. The KWEB China Internet ETF on pace for the fourth straight day of gains. Pinduoduo and Alibaba among the top performers. And then the KBE Bank ETF on pace for its best day since April 19th. Silvergate, Citi, Signature Bank, Rocket Companies, all up almost 5% or greater so far today. And now to Tyler Matheson for a CNBC News update. Bye.
John, thank you very much and good afternoon, everybody. After visiting a makeshift memorial to the victims of Saturday's supermarket massacre in Buffalo, President Biden strongly denounced the white supremacist ideology the alleged shooter embraced in social media postings, calling it poison.
The hate that through the media and politics, the internet, has radicalized angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals into falsely believing that they will be replaced, that's the word, replaced by the other. I call on all Americans to reject the lie. And I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit.
Well, someone in the cockpit intentionally crashed a China Eastern jet earlier this year, killing all 132 people on board. The Wall Street Journal reports that is the preliminary assessment of U.S. officials based on black box flight data. And U.S. officials say Chevron will be able to negotiate its future operations in Venezuela. The U.S. will relax some sanctions on that country as talks resume with Venezuela's government. Tonight on the news, how a California law is affecting out-of-state pig farmers. That's tonight on the news. John, back to you.
All right. Tyler, thanks. Still ahead, AMD down more than 30% this year, but my next guest is upgrading the stock. Sees more than 40% upside from here. He joins us to make the case next. And during May, we are celebrating Asian American and Pacific Islander heritage, featuring some of our CNBC teammates and contributors. Here's Ed Lee.
A big part of being Asian American is finding allyship with other groups, and because we can't do it alone. If you look at the Black community, the Latino community, other people of color, people who have generally been marginalized, it's all the same struggle. And to think that we're somehow apart from that takes away from our heritage, because a big part of our heritage is about trying to make it, about trying to find success. And that's what everyone's trying to do.
Welcome back to The Exchange. Now, for the second day in a row, analysts at Piper Sandler making a bold call on a beaten down stock. Today, the firm upgrading AMD to overweight, saying PC growth, strength in gaming, and an attractive share price are all reasons to get back in the game. AMD is higher today, but down about 30% this year as supply chain headwinds slam the entire chip sector. It's also nearly 40% off its November high. Let's welcome in the analyst behind the call. Joining me now is Harsh Kumar, senior research analyst at Piper Sandler. Harsh, welcome. Now, the NBA playoffs are going on, and I appreciate a good crossover as much as the next guy. But a week and a half ago, you had a neutral rating on this and reduced the price target from 130 to 98. Now you're putting it back up at 140. What changed?
So thank you, John, for having me on your show. The biggest thing that happened is the stock's come in a lot since I downgraded. We cut the stock at about 137, 138, something like that, about a few months ago. And our thesis was that the PC sales were going to slow down. That would be a headwind to Xilinx, that would be a headwind to AMD, and also the Xilinx acquisition wouldn't be materially impactful. Well, as it turns out, AMD is navigating those headwinds extremely well, and the Xilinx acquisition has turned out to be a good one for these guys. So with the stock having come in dramatically lower since previously and trading at just 20 multiple on a forward basis, we thought it'd be a good time for investors to perhaps take a look at AMD.
Now, given what's happening in the economy overall, I mean, even throughout the whole chip sector, look at Qualcomm and how it's behaved after some strong earnings, Marvell similarly. In a way, you were right about AMD, but it's almost like you're making yourself either wrong or you think things dramatically reverse from here in a way that the macro environment isn't saying. So what else has to happen for this call to be correct? Or do you think regardless of what happens in the macro environment, AMD's going higher?
I think it's the latter. I think the risks to a company like AMD is relatively little. The biggest risk, of course, from the macro is that the Fed is tightening. We know that, and the consumer is slowing down. And that's directly affecting two parts of the company's business, the first one being the PC business. But fortunately, or strategically for AMD, AMD made a big pivot towards commercial PCs. So the kind of PCs we have at work, other folks have at work, these are higher priced PCs that are not so susceptible to the retail slowdown at the low end. And they've been shipping these computers or chips to these computers for about three quarters now. And it's become a meaningful percentage of the business. And we think it will help navigate this PC market headwind that somebody like an Intel might see, for example. The second business that's susceptible to the consumer slowdown would be the semi-custom business, which is the chips for the PS5 and the Xbox 5 consoles. But as you probably know, if you have kids, those consoles are still extremely hard to find. They're still trading at way above MSRP. The chips for those are still in short supply. So we think this year, the console business will be a very good grower. So net-net, we have a situation where the PC business is mitigating the headwinds to a pivot towards commercial PCs. The semiconductor business, the semi-custom business is strong. The server business has always been strong for the last 3 or 4 years for the company.
Well,
and Xilinx is a nice cap on the stock.
Give me your sense of what then is happening in the semiconductor space overall. We have Qualcomm turning in some strong results in its quarter, a lot of that on industrial IoT. I think their IoT business was up something like 61%. You've got Marvell also doing pretty well on hyperscalers and their cloud share. And NVIDIA's down 40%, I believe, year to date. Do you have a call on some of these generally well-performing companies overall whose stocks are down, or is this just an AMD thing?
So we upgraded the entire sector today as well. We went negative on the sector at the beginning of the year on January 3rd, and we just basically said that stocks have come in enough. Through the year, what we heard talking to investors was the recession or slowdown, whatever you want to call it, is coming. We want to see about a 15 to 20% haircut to the earnings number because that's what investors thought would happen. As it turned out, with the declines in the stocks that we've seen through the course of the year, the stocks are pretty much trading at that 15% haircut. So it's a very interesting analysis. If you apply the average multiple for the last 10 years, you get kind of stock prices that are in the range that the stocks are at today. Including a 15% head cut to earnings. Now, we do not anticipate going to the lows of the 10-year. The lows were typically set in the trade war timeframe. And the problem with thinking about the trade war is that there were about 30% of the revenues of the semiconductor industry were at stake with China. That were potentially going to go away. We don't see that situation happening. We see a soft landing, perhaps even a mid landing, maybe possibly a hard landing for some time, but not a 30% reduction in revenue.
But it sounds like not a recession, because normally when we talk about 10 years, we're talking about, boy, ups and downs. But this economy, this market has been pretty much up for the whole 10 years. A recession then would change your calculus?
A recession would change my calculus a little bit. But the point is, the stocks have already reflected that. If you look at the semiconductor companies, they all have free cash flow. They have very strong earnings power. We are still in short supply type of material. And with the 15% calculus that I'm applying towards haircutting the earnings, I think we're pretty much there.
All right. Well, from Walmart pessimism at the beginning to some semiconductor optimism here, we're getting certainly a diverse look at this economy. Harsh Kumar, thank you.
Thank you.
Still ahead. It is easing a bit today, but the dollar climbing to levels not seen in 20 years with last week's market sell-off. The sectors that could benefit and the ones that could take a hit are next. The Exchange is back in two. Welcome back to The Exchange. The dollar easing for a third straight day, but still hitting a 20-year high last week as investors sought safety from volatility. Seema Modi is here with a look at the companies that stand to gain and which stand to lose in a strong dollar environment. Seema.
Hey, John, good afternoon. If big tech did not have enough to worry about, the 7% rise in the dollar this year has created yet another headwind, especially for companies that rely on sales overseas. For example, in the first quarter, Apple made around 63% of its revenue outside the U.S. For Microsoft, it's about 50%. Beyond tech, industrials and materials remain vulnerable to the stronger dollar. Those are the two other sectors that generate, again, most or a significant amount of their sales outside the U.S. As our emerging markets, which did see outflows of $4 billion in the month of April, you'll see they're up today, but they've underperformed the S&P 500 in the last 3 months. On the flip side, the winners, well, according to Crescent Capital, small caps, which do have more of a domestic tilt, and travel companies. The stronger currency is advantageous to Americans traveling overseas to certain destinations like Europe, where your money can go further. For example, if you converted $100 back in May of 2021, you would have received 82 euros. Today, it's around 94 euros. So that can certainly have an effect on people's psyche when they're booking travel.
That's a pretty good exchange. And it feels like you're paying more to actually get there in a plane. But then when you get there, maybe you can afford to buy an expensive bag also, which I know some people like to try. So how is that reflected in the bookings? And do you have any insight on how luxury goods might be impacted as well?
So to answer your first question, bookings to Europe have been growing consistently this year. They're up about 11% in the last 2 months, according to data from Hopper. One of the questions that comes up there is, well, if you look at the travel landscape, which are the companies that are best positioned to win in this type of environment? It really comes down to Intercontinental, Accor, Marriott, Hilton. These are the sort of subset of companies that have really grown their portfolio of properties across Europe. So that's something to keep in mind. Again, these currency moves are pretty significant. If you look at year to date, the dollar is now, I think, up around 12% against the Japanese yen this year, against the euro around 7%. We're expecting it to trade in parity with the euro sometime later this year, according to HSBC and Goldman Sachs. So the effect it has then on luxury goods, purchasing of goods overseas, that certainly could be a bigger benefit over time, too.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the Walmart customer getting pinched,
clearly,
but,
yeah,
you know, the higher-end customer, as is so often the case,
exactly,
not as much.
Yeah.
Seema, thanks. Up next, it is the 10th annual CNBC Disruptor 50 list. It's out today. It's our list of the 50 private companies poised to shake up their industries. And there was one big theme that emerged this year, logistics. We're going to talk to the CEO of Flock Freight, which clocked in at number 14. We'll look at how they are working to mitigate the trucking shortage. The Exchange, we'll be right back. Welcome back. CNBC revealing its 10th annual Disruptor 50 list, and freight companies dominated this year as supply chain disruptions continue to impact the global economy. Julia Boorstin joins me now. She created the Disruptor 50, and she joins us with who made the cut and what sets them apart. Julia, I mean, I guess we knew for a while that supply chain was a big deal, but what in particular is important about these companies on the list this year?
These companies on the list are growing fast, and they are addressing a massive addressable market. Now, there are more logistics-related companies than any other category on this year's Disruptor 50 list, 10 companies in total, including the top company on the list, Flexport. It's a logistics company that's battling the global supply chain crisis and transforming a trillion-dollar industry, doing that by tracking and streamlining the movement of cargo across ships, planes, trucks, and rail for more than 10,000 clients and suppliers. Number three is Lineage Logistics, which uses a proprietary freezing process to prevent waste in the food supply chain. And some other companies in the category on the list include Convoy and Flock Freight, which work to minimize empty space in trucks, and Zipline and Airspace. Those two companies focus on time-critical logistics for the likes of medicine and even transporting organs. Plus, there are companies that are using data to speed up delivery. Mexico-based Justo works directly with food suppliers and uses AI in its micro-fulfillment centers, and GoPuff, which just announced its own label, own line of private label products. Now, investments into supply chain management companies have been surging, growing to over $11 billion last year, up from $6 billion in 2020 and $9 billion the year before, according to Crunchbase. Of course, you can find more on the fast-growing logistics sector and all of these companies on cnbc.com/disruptors. And at the end of the day, John, there's massive demand for these companies, and they are growing quickly.
Now, I'm going to try out a stretch on you, Julia, because I see a parallel between some of these logistics companies and Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Airbnb, which are trying to maximize the utilization of certain assets, cars, houses. Not everybody's got them, but everybody wants to use them. Kind of similar to ships, trains, and trucks, right?
Absolutely. These companies, for the most part, are focused on making sure that things move quickly and efficiently through the system. So you don't have things stuck at a port or stuck on the back of a truck waiting to get loaded onto a ship. Or in the case of the companies that are focused on refrigeration, they want to make sure that things are kept fresh so you don't have to worry about things spoiling because they weren't kept at the proper temperature. So it's all about maximizing efficiency. And a lot of these companies have an environmental bent as well, with the idea that the more efficient you are, the less your carbon offsets are, or your need for carbon offsets are. And some of them even enable their customers to buy carbon offsets.
Makes a lot of sense. Julia, thanks. Now let's dig a little deeper with one of these names. Flock Freight, shipping and logistics company, aims to solve the supply chain crisis and reduce waste by pooling multiple shippers' freight into a single multi-stop truckload. Joining me now, Flock Freight CEO and founder, Oren Zaslensky. Oren, welcome. Congratulations. Number 14, I believe. Now tell me, what is the key differentiator among all of these different players in this logistics, booming logistics area, that's going to allow you to succeed where some others might not? Is it quality of data? Is it access to data? Is it a particular technology?
Hey, John, thanks for having me today. Love that question. I would argue it's sort of all of the above. We believe at Flock Freight that we've truly created a win-win-win environment whereby creating these algorithmic proprietary carpools of less than full truckload freight, allowing freight to ride share throughout the United States. We think of our key stakeholders, the shipper, manufacturer, that's our demand side customer, them for the first time ever having access to buying just the amount of truck that they need. A bit of a dirty secret for those of us that have been in the freight industry like myself for sadly over a couple decades now is that about half of all the trucks you see on the highway are only half full. It's obviously incredibly expensive to send a truck half full. And from a sustainability standpoint, we're creating the same amount of greenhouse gas emissions for a half full truck. Flock is allowing those manufacturers and shippers to only have to pay for as much truck as they need by combining their shipments with our other customer shipments. Additionally, on the supply side of the marketplace, what we call the carriers, the truckers that are out there, which I would argue is the hardest working persona in this country. Those men and women are making sure that all of us get to eat and provide for our families. They're moving around those trucks on the other side of that coin is their trucks are only half full. And they can come to Flock, and they are, and they are flocking to us, pun intended, in order for us to make sure that those trucks get even fuller, if not completely full, very close to it, which allows them to make more money. It's the first time ever in the United States and in the world, in the supply chain, where customers are able to save money, gain access to the highest possible quality, and the truckers themselves are able to make more money than they've ever made before.
Oren, I wonder, though, about the consistency of the technology and thus the consistency of the data across trucking fleets. It seems like it would be nice. You know, I know Samsara is a newly public company that has some work in this area, but it would be nice if every truck had a simple baseline of, I know where it is, I know, you know, how fast it's moving, I know how full it is, et cetera, so that you could, run algorithms on this stuff and get better and smarter over time. What percentage of the fleet that's out there has that basic technology that you would need to advance this business and this technology at the rate that you'd like?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. On the one hand, I could answer it and say probably over 90% of the trucks out on the road have something called an ELD, an electronic log device. Just think a chip, a bit of hardware in the truck that floats that data up and provides telemetry. Where's the truck right now? And that is the truth. The unfortunate or the frustrating part for those of us working within the supply chain is that data is only always opted in for the Department of Transportation. That technology exists to make sure that the U.S. fleet is only operating so many hours per day. There are many individuals and firms out there working on creating accessibility to that data in order for us to be able to help drive more efficiency and greater earnings. For us at Flock, what we found is because we have such a differentiated offering, an offering whereby carriers can make more money, instead of the standard kind of arguing over one slice of pizza and who's going to get what, and we end up tearing the thing in half, we're making the pie bigger. We're making the pizza bigger, therefore there's more slices. Those carriers and drivers are actually coming inbound to Flock and giving us that data. They're okay. opting in at industry-leading rates because we have the ability to help them make them more money. It's a pretty simple equation. Well, if you can help them make more, reduce friction, improve their quality of life, they're going to hand that data over, and we're experiencing that every day.
Sounds like that could be deflationary, and that sure would help these days. Yeah. Oren Zaslansky, thanks, from Flock Freight. Coming up, with oil prices surging, the companies are bringing in big bucks. But instead of using that money to drill, some are returning cash to shareholders instead. The names paying out the most, next on The Exchange. Welcome back to The Exchange. Crude is taking a slight breather today after climbing more than 53% this year. And companies are handling this price surge differently than they have in the past. Pippa Stevens joins me now with why it might be a new age for big oil. Pippa.
Hey, John. This could be the start of a new era for energy companies. Oil and gas prices are surging, which would usually lead to increased drilling activity. But this time around, executives are pledging to keep spending down. And this is having an immediate impact on balance sheets. Free cash flow across U.S. shale companies is forecast to hit a record $172 billion this year, according to Deloitte. Now, capital spending is up from the last 2 years, but it's still far below pre-pandemic levels. And part of this increase is thanks to inflation rather than new production. So with all of this cash on hand, companies are rewarding shareholders through buybacks and dividends. When combined, Coterra and APA are among the top returners, with 2022's total annual yield forecast around 15%, according to Raymond James. Devon Energy, Diamondback, and EOG all at more than 8%. So to sum it all up, Raymond James said that exploration and production companies have reinvented their business models from growth-focused to return-oriented. And a number of energy stocks are hitting multi-year highs today, including Devon, Oxy, and Pioneer, as well as giants Exxon and Chevron, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure drivers would like to control their spending as well at the pump, but don't exactly have that choice. So I'd love to hear at some point what the company's excuses are for not drilling more. Well, Pippa, thank you. And that'll do it for The Exchange.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.